Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 268.
This week on the podcast, you know shit's bad when local election results in Virginia make California liberals this happy.
And Roy Moore is a pederast, because of course.
Plus, Trump and Putin don't know what they know about what they don't know about Russia's election hacking.
And Mitch McConnell to America, I can't promise this tax cut is for you.
Shocking update, there are issues with our background check system for guns.
And Carla Nordstrom joins us on the podcast.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's right.
We have a special guest this week. My mom is here, Carla Nordstrom.
Love Carla Weeks.
Welcome
back. Thank you. Thank you. It's great to be here.
And this is where we remind you that Puerto Rico still has no power.
Yeah, and this week is continues to be tragic, that they don't have power. But this week, well, last week we told you about this Whitefish company, which was the company that only had two people that was brought in to fix
Salt
the entire power grid. Yeah, exactly.
From Montana.
Right, yeah. So, they bungled it more than we even could have expected in the short amount of time they were there before their contract got revoked, because they are now without more power than previously because they screwed up.
Yeah, Whitefish had been repairing a high voltage transmission line that failed. And so what 40% of the island had been lacking power, now 80% of the island has no power.
Sure, yeah.
And so things are even worse. Puerto Rico has less power than the last time we spoke
to you.
Unbelievably.
Yeah.
Thanks to Whitefish Energy and also just like general shitty luck, it seems like.
Yeah.
This is the longest power outage in U.S.
history.
So we could try to, I don't know, pressure somebody to fix this.
Somebody should be able to take care of this, right?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
And we'll be here to remind you week after week as it continues to not be repaired. I feel like it's not going to be repaired by Christmas like they promised.
I know. That was supposed to be Puerto Rico's Christmas gift.
Yeah.
From
America. Was only 3 months of no power.
They're members of.
Yes. Exactly. So let's deal with that, you guys. But we had a relatively good week, as weeks go in this day and age, because we had our first sort of positive election results in the last, at least in the last year.
Well, first wins, anyway. It had been getting a little depressing that we hadn't actually won anything, even though there were actually, like, good signs
from
a lot of the races that we had had. But, like, still, you know, just having...
Couldn't get anyone actually in there.
We couldn't get past the goal line, if you will. And, we did this week, and big time, too.
Yeah.
Bigly.
It helped, I think, that it was such an off-cycle race that it didn't... It only got attention among the kind of people who are outraged right now. So maybe that helped.
Yeah.
But there was a governor's race in Virginia. There was a governor's race in New Jersey. There were state and local races in several states.
Yeah.
We won the Virginia governor's race. Yeah. Thank God, because that for a while was not looking good.
Well, right. I mean, we talked last week about like how, you know, Northam was not doing as well in some rural counties. And he was only there
because he was a rural guy. That was the only reason they put him in the position to run in the first place.
It was looking like that maybe that was going to be super close. And all of the polls were close for that. And it ended up being a massive blowout.
Yeah. I mean, with huge turnout.
We know how Virginia is because it's like always that state where it like looks like it's close and it looks like the Democrat is going to lose, and then you have to wait until the very last second when Northern Virginia finally reports all of their votes, and then it swoops to the Democrats. But that didn't even happen this time.
No,
before I went home from work, they'd called it, and I was like, "Wait, what?"
He was ahead by 6 points in the rural counties, and then they hadn't even gotten to Northern Virginia yet. Northern Virginia is ultimately the only place that matters in Virginia.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he won by 9 points, which is huge. That's a swing state. To win by 9 points in a swing state, that's huge.
Yeah.
And big turnout.
Yes.
Lots of people showed up to vote.
It was the most people that have voted in a governor's race in in Virginia since 1997. It's been 20 years. So, that's huge.
Totally. And the number one issue that they said they were voting on was healthcare.
I was so shocked at that. And I don't really know why, because I guess it makes sense. But it seems like
Virginia's other fish to fry.
But also, of course it was.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it seems like we're a little far removed from sort of that healthcare fight. But like, you know, once people are threatening to take your healthcare away, it seems
you gotta show up to the polls.
That stays fresh in your mind, I guess, apparently.
Yeah. I mean, I guess... When you're forced to pick why you're voting in a year like this, that's also a tough question.
Maybe you just
go with whatever has been most consistently stressing you out over the last few months. Because obviously there are many reasons
right.
that you could have chosen to show up to vote in this election
yeah.
that have that pertain to how terrifying Washington is right now.
Yeah.
But
that that should be a
that's a warning.
That's a 2018 warning
there
shot.
There are some
right
bad
there.
Signs all over this election for yeah. the Obamacare repeal efforts because yeah. Maine, as we're going to talk about in a second, also some bad news for Obamacare truthers and deniers.
deniers.
Yeah. But in any case, it seemed like it was fairly centered on, you know, anger at Trump.
Well, that's what was so besides the fact that like. It was a blowout. And besides the fact that, like, there was, you know, we're going to talk specifically about the House of Delegates in a little bit. There were so many races that seemed like sort of clear choices, not just between, like, Republicans and Democrats, but just between, like, you know,
writing
values and, right, exactly. And you know, like, because Gillespie, the guy who had been the Republican in this race, had been really sort of embraced Trump. He had Trump do some robocalls for him. He was really hitting the, you know, anti-immigrant thing, and he was really going. He
Trump
was really
himself
going,
had mixed feelings about him.
Well,
as I recall.
After the fact, yeah,
yeah.
He did.
But
yeah,
I think also part of with Gillespie, he's a mainline Republican.
He
is.
He ran the
RNC right, for a number
yeah.
of years, and so he started that way in this race, and then pivoted into Trump land.
Yeah,
and they thought. That was what yep. was going to work for them,
yeah.
and that
and he
was
made
the...
a big deal about like keeping some of the statues of
oh
Civil
yeah the
War,
Stonewall Jackson
that's, right.
and
so,
Robert
like,
E. Lee statues.
So it like there was sort of a real besides just Republicans and Democrats, there was sort of like a you know
a kind of
felt more than that for
yeah,
whatever like yes lifestyle
a lifestyle yeah. campaign
yeah.
And it well it there I was there there were a lot of headlines after the fact that basically said running on Trump without Trump doesn't work. That's
well, right.
what we learned is that you can't
yeah.
and that's bad for 2018. That's a bad sign because
is.
Trump
yeah.
is not running in 2018.
Right. Well, and we've talked a ton on this podcast right. and we didn't, you know, invent this theory, but I mean the Trump is sort of like more a personality sort
yeah,
of thing
than
it's like
than an
you know,
idea.
Ed Gillespie is just like a boring, you know, goon. I mean, he's yeah. not you he's not Trump.
No. Like, he's kind of like Martin O'Malley of the right. Like he's just he's a guy. And to if
yeah.
you're like on the right and a generic person, you might be like, yeah, all right.
Sure.
But
yeah.
he's not like he doesn't have qualities.
No.
You know?
No.
He lacks
no.
qualities.
Yeah.
But an even bigger story that came out of the Virginia races was their House of Delegates races.
Yeah.
Because not only did they flip a ton of seats, but they flipped a ton of seats with some like very poignant with candidates like
right.
I mean that's you know you're
well and this
I'm
sort of
sure...
like this sort of goes to what like we were just talking about in terms of sort of like clear choices
yeah.
like you know we had the first trans person elected to any statewide or federal office and not only was she the first trans candidate but she was running against Bigot Bob
yeah a guy who called himself the chief homophobe of Virginia
right exactly
and had written the trans bathroom
he
bill.
Had written the trans bathroom bill so it was like
yeah.
you know they could pick like
exactly.
that was an easy it was like a trans person like an actual trans
right.
person or trans bathroom
well and
bill.
More importantly a trans person who was talking about roads and other infrastructure
right.
issues
yeah
and,
I mean that was
and,
a
true
her
a bigot,
whole candidacy was not
whose
based
whole
on,
candidacy was about being a bigot
well,
so
right.
that but I mean even
yeah.
that as a choice is people would, I think, often in races rather have somebody running on ideas that actually affect them than ideology.
Right.
I think we learned that in the presidential race, but I think that works on the local level too. And I think,
sure.
and I think that also means that if you are somebody who cares about transportation and roads issues in your county, and you're
right.
like not super into trans people, but like not trying to care that much about them,
right.
you'd rather vote for the trans person who cares about roads than the guy who literally calls himself the chief homophobe of Virginia.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
if that's what your choices are,
yeah.
then that gives you, that's a clear choice.
Clear
somebody
choice.
Cares about your count, your district, and someone doesn't.
Right. Like, yeah.
I think also one of the things that was amazing, they showed pictures of the people who are serving now and the people who are elected.
Yeah.
And it was all of the people who lost their seats were white men. Most of them with gray hair.
The sort of visual and makeup of the House of Delegates.
Yeah, there were a couple of white men.
Sure.
But one of them was the husband, the boyfriend.
Oh, yeah, oh, that yes. woman who was killed on yes. live television, yeah. the reporter who had been right. killed. Right.
Another was a veteran who was a Democratic Socialist.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And, but the diversity was so amazing to see. And yeah. so.
Well, and that Democratic Socialist, that was a massive upset in that yes. district, yes. too. Yes. And because he beat the majority whip.
Right, yeah. right.
And nobody thought that. Too. Yeah, and there yeah. were some, he sort of didn't really, that was an interesting race because he didn't really get the help that he sort of like thought he should be getting in that race and then sort of really didn't, you know, warm up to the party quite as the Democratic Party quite as right. much as, you know.
He was maybe.
Maybe yeah, initially would've. Planning to or, you know, thought that they should have, but he still won anyway and that. Right. That was a massive
upset. And one of the things that happens, and this is one of the problems that the Democrats have, is that people have their own, who work in the party, who are like the county leaders and the state leaders, they have their own funny little power bases, even though they may have been losing elections
right.
year in and year out.
Well, and this
out.
Is something you deal with in your district in upstate New York a lot.
Yes, yes, where they don't...
Where they don't even run people for anything up
they
there.
They don't run people. What, the Democrats don't. The Republicans always run people. But they also, you can't, like I, with the website of seedsofdemocracy.org, which is about the 19th congressional district in New York State, which is a swing district, I've been trying to get the names of the people who, the county chairs, and I went to the state website, and it's so outdated, I didn't even know who the person was in my own county, and I've known who that person is for years.
Right.
And there was no way to reach people. I've had to email people on, or send messages on Facebook to try to yeah. get email addresses. Uh-huh. In fact, with one of the county leaders, a Democratic county chair, there was no email address, so I called, and his wife answered the phone, and she said, "Oh no, he doesn't use the computer. But you can send it to my email address because
oh, no.
What was really funny? She said you can send it to me because we've been married for over 60 years, so we share everything. And the thing that was so amazing, she had a Gmail address, which was I mean, I thought she would say an AOL address or Yahoo.
She's
with it. But I mean, this is the chair of a county.
Yeah.
In upstate New
York. But I think probably they like it that way, right?
They absolutely like it that way.
That's on purpose.
Exactly.
Yeah,
yeah, because right. the thing is, if people get elected, then the power changes.
Yep.
And they bring in their own people. Mm-hmm. That guy in Virginia will be bringing in his own people.
Exactly.
And,
Well, and this is, I mean, this is going to be, this is, I think, in many ways, probably going to reshuffle their entire state Democratic operation because so many people were unexpected victories and because so many
they said going into this night that they felt like if they picked up somewhere between like 6 to 9 then it would have been sort of like a banner evening and right now they have flipped officially 15 and there's like 3 or 4 that they're still recounting. They needed to get 17 to get
control.
But so basically, and nobody thought that was going to even within the realm of possibility even sort of like in the rosiest projections, but
They could. Even if they don't, they're now basically almost tied with Republicans in the
Republicans are going to have to
start playing ball with them.
They're going to have to play ball with them because they
This is the biggest flip in one direction since Reconstruction in Virginia.
Isn't that crazy?
This is the when
that's a statistic right there.
This is when we remember that Reconstruction was unfortunately not even that long ago.
Well, I know. But considering that you have elections every 4 years.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's true.
It is. Yeah. But yes, I mean.
But so also important, 13 Democratic candidates who are part of the Progressive Group activate Virginia's pledge not to take donations from state-regulated power companies were victorious.
Yeah, so like 13 of the 15 were not taking they might have taken other corporate money, but they didn't take corporate. And that's a huge thing there because they're dealing with a lot of issues of pipelines in Virginia right now and things like that. So that was the reason that was even requested of the Democrats was to not take money from those power companies. So that's huge.
That's huge.
Yeah. Yeah.
But also one of the things that was great about this, it was a lot of first-time people running for office.
Yep.
And what it will do, I think, is inspire others. I mean,
It'll help activate.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
and
in a lot of places too, and we had talked about this on the podcast before, but in Virginia, like in what it sounds like upstate New York, they just aren't running Democrats in a exactly. lot of these places. And they ran something like almost twice as many or like a third as many Democrats as they have ever done yeah. before. So they're actually yeah. like putting people on the ballot. And that means even if that person loses, it's like you have that person involved. And you also sort of have a structure in that district.
Yeah, and then you develop people, a base in right, that exactly. district. Right. Nobody, yes. If you don't have a Democrat on the ballot, you can't win.
Right.
As
right.
a Democrat.
But also yeah. you have what Jessica Byrd, who's my hero in this all, who runs candidates. There's something, what she calls the gatekeepers. And these are when people who haven't run before, they go and talk to the Democrats, or probably the same thing happens to the Republicans. They say, oh, well, you shouldn't run for state senate. I mean, you should just run for school board.
Right.
Because you can't raise the money. Mm. And she,
it's all money.
Yeah, it's all money. Yeah. And what she looks for is candidates who have been involved in their community and also have integrity. And yeah. basically right. that, and she says, if you got those, you can do it.
Well, and that's what, yeah. you know, you see, like with this trans candidate who ran, she was a reporter with the local paper. Yeah. She was known right. in the community. Yeah. She knew a lot about the issues that she was talking about. So she yeah. was a first-time candidate who had deep roots in the community. Yeah. That's what you need to win a local race, yeah. especially.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, in a district where you could conceivably meet everyone, what do you need all this money for?
Right, exactly.
You know?
Yeah,
you
totally.
Need money to run for president because you can't meet every person in America. You can only meet every person in Iowa.
Right, yes.
But for God's sake.
And you must.
You exactly. right. To be the president, right. you're required to meet every person in Iowa. But I mean, to run for your, you know, your state assembly seat.
Like, yeah.
You could
yeah.
conceivably well, meet everyone.
Right, yeah. but you have a situation like in upstate New York where the Democrats are, as I've said, are really nowhere to be found. It's like the best kept secret in the state. But the people, the anti-fracking people, are yeah. amazing. They oh, are so sure. well organized. Well, they have been yeah. doing it for years. Yeah. And they haven't, at this up until now, they haven't really gotten involved in politics. But in our congressional district, over 100 groups have formed since January.
Right.
And with those groups, it's the people who are involved in them are real professionals that are organizing.
I'm sure.
And
yeah.
so, it's,
yeah.
you know, we have yeah. like six good candidates who are running for the
Congress.
Yeah. yeah for and,
well, and those groups would throw their weight behind a candidate. Yeah. You know what yeah. I mean? But there has to be one.
There has to be a candidate.
Yeah, they have to have a person to vote for.
But right. it also has got to be somebody who really deals with the local issues.
Yeah. Right.
And is a, you know, is
yeah.
is somebody who's been working in the local issues.
Yeah.
When money in any election situation, money should be a secondary concern, because a person who has money but no way to connect to the voters
right.
is a person who yeah. can waste a lot of money.
Yeah.
A person who has a way of connecting to the voters, especially in a state like New York where there's a city filled with rich people just a few hours away, you can yeah. find the money.
Yeah.
The
yeah.
money isn't as yeah. hard to find as right. the charisma.
Well, right. but what yeah, this sure. is but another thing that happens is that the Republicans, if there's somebody running against a Republican for like the state Senate, then they kick in the extra money.
Right.
So the campaign will cost $1 million, but it's because the Republican Party has $600,000.
Right, sure. yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so then you have somebody like who is running against a Democrat that they're not worried about, and that Democrat will be like $9,000 or $18,000 that they have
right.
running against a guy who has a cash of, you know,
right.
$500,000. I mean, it's just, it's outrageous.
Yeah.
But we, in New York, especially in our district, you know, if we can get some people elected, like, to the state Senate, that will make a huge change in New York. Well, the city of New York, you know, people in New York City are just desperate to do something about this yeah. situation. And what they can do is they can send money to upstate New York.
Right, yeah.
While we're on it, tell us how your candidates did. We mentioned your candidates.
Yes, you did mention our candidates. We had six progressive women running for town board and, in one case, town supervisor in Delaware County, New York, which is...
It's
a very Republican
area.
It's a county of 28,000 registered voters, so it's very, very small.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And of the six candidates, two of them won.
Nice.
Two of them came close enough that they're now they have to wait for the absentee ballots to be counted.
A hilarious number of absentee ballots, by the way, being cast in small towns.
For instance, in my town in Franklin with Trish Tyrell, she lost by 22 votes, but there are 39 absentee ballots. And if they are, I've looked at the list. You know, we've all looked at the list. But if there may be enough of them who voted with us because what they did is they just voted for one candidate. There were two candidates, two positions up. So it could, you know, who knows? And then there were two who didn't win, but they still were very,
It gives them experience as candidates. Yeah. It gives them a chance to build an organization in their town. I mean, like, it's always worth running someone if you can, because you can never take a seat back that you're not running for.
Right. Yeah. And what we found is we have talent in this district to run for state offices.
Well, that's really what you were looking
for. And that's what we were...
You know, in Running Seeds of Democracy, you've been really looking to find people to run for some of these state offices that everyone's been running unopposed for in these very gerrymandered districts for years now.
Right. Yeah. And the thing that's really funny, what I discovered, there are 8 of the state senate districts in our congressional district. There are 8 state senate seats, and they all are run, or they all have Republican state senators. 5 of those districts have more Democrats than Republicans in the district. And not only that, one of the districts, which has a conservative Republican representative, is FDR's district. It's where, you know, and there are more Democrats in the district. It's unbelievable.
Right.
But no one's paying attention.
I think that with this Virginia race.
Well, we are now.
We're going to start. People are going to start. So moving on, we have the New Jersey governor's race.
Yeah.
We're finally rid of Chris Christie.
Yeah. I mean, we were going to be anyway because he wasn't in the race, but his lieutenant governor was.
We're rid of the stain.
Too bad
Chris
for her.
Yeah.
Because
his approval rating is like 0%, basically.
Yeah.
So,
it's truly like 14 or something.
Yeah,
like that.
It's very low.
It's the lowest in the country, I think, of any sitting governors. Yeah.
So, you can't stick around for that long and not have people find out.
But nobody thought that was going to be close. But I mean, it still is a governorship flip. So
exactly. And in a state that should have never had a Republican governor.
Right, exactly. And they control the state legislature. So they are now a state that can sort of like get up
to
whatever they want to now, which is great.
And the thing that I think for me, the biggest headline out of this election day was the main prop on the Medicaid expansion.
Yeah.
Because I think that spells a kind of trouble for these Obamacare repeal efforts that no one was anticipating this election would provide.
Because Maine is also a state that has, I mean, Maine has a Republican governor. It has two Republican senators. Granted, one of them is a halfway reasonable person, but
because King is an independent, but I just want to point out their Republican governor is not just any Republican.
He's
their Republican
like
governor is Paul LePage. They have Trump as their governor,
right?
So I mean, they're wacky,
and he has vetoed 5 times the legislature has sent him a bill to accept the Medicaid expansion, and so they put it on the ballot, and it's also the first time that this has ever been on the ballot in the country.
Well, exactly. And that's what I think is so significant here.
Yes.
You have a crazy pants governor in a crazy pants state that is up to electing crazy pants people left, right, and center.
Who's vetoing this legislation.
And who's been vetoing this legislation for years at this point. And the state of only sometimes reasonable people was just like, fuck it.
And it was a
blowout.
Let's
do it. It was a blowout.
It was 60 to 40, basically.
There are plenty of other states that have been eyeing this. There are other states that already have the organization in place to put this on their ballot with this as an example of a hugely successful attempt at it.
Yeah.
I think we're going to see a lot of these states that didn't take the Medicaid money start to pursue this.
I do too.
And that, if you are in the process as someone who is elected to serve this state, if you are in the process of trying to repeal Obamacare while your state is with these numbers electing to expand it, then you are in a quandary.
Yeah. Paul LePage is still
he's trying
not
to veto
shockingly
it.
Saying that he's right. He's not going to do it.
But you also know that Susan Collins will be totally firm on Obamacare now.
Yeah.
Because
she doesn't want to lose her seat.
And what's the word? Is she running for, what's she doing?
She's not running for governor. She decided not to do that.
I couldn't, I wasn't sure.
But she's going to get it in the Senate.
but this is going to give 70,000 people healthcare in Maine.
And it passed with 60% of the vote.
I mean,
so it did not.
Yeah.
It did not fool around.
But again, GOP should be on watch.
Yeah, well, I think if you're going to start seeing swingy states like Maine, you know, doing this kind of thing, that's a sign that residents, even in particularly difficult states, are not interested in having some bullshit happen with their health care.
Yeah.
You know, that to me is a sign that, A, states should take their destinies into their own hands and start doing what they can at the state level.
Well, I was just about to say that states that who haven't taken the Medicaid expansion, the Democrats in these states should be getting ballot initiatives.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But they should be working to try and get these on ballots. There are already a couple of states
that have had, already have the plan to have this on the ballot in 2018. Good. I can't remember what they are. But so I think that we're going to start.
That's going to help drive turnout too, obviously, because it turns out people want to keep their health care.
It's crazy to think about.
Right?
Especially in a state that has a questionably large number of old people who are living in frigid temperatures.
Yeah. Well, and it also has a huge, it's one of the states that has a big opioid crisis.
Yes.
Too.
Totally.
So that's another reason why they're not trying to, you know, have their healthcare ripped out from underneath them.
But so in any case, I think that was the biggest news out of this entire race in terms of national, you know, in terms of national impact.
Yeah.
Obviously, if you live in Virginia, great work. You did it. You know?
Right. Yeah.
But we also saw in Washington, they picked up a seat that will allow the Democrats to control all three chambers.
Yeah. Because they already have the governorship and they have the House.
They did not have the Senate.
Yeah. And this was like, you know, this is the type, I love that we're caring about these races. You know what I mean? Like, because I mean, we always care about stuff like this,
right.
But like this was like a story, you know, like this is not a race that like we would be sitting around talking about, but like, you know, now we care. And that's another thing that's sort of like exciting about the political world that we live in now, in 2018 as well. Yeah.
Because
outside groups poured a lot of money into this because they knew it was going to, you know, Washington is a state that is like basically like trying to follow California's lead. I mean, they have like tried to pass a carbon tax. They have tried to do like a, you know, expand birth control even further than, you know, like
they were leading the fight for 15 in.
Right. And they haven't been able to do some of these things because of just the numbers in the state senate, and now they've got it. So.
They have a similar situation to a lot of blue states where they have a very conservative wing of the state that is small but takes up a lot of land geographically and is just like up to shenanigans. You know, the sort of Spokane vote, if you will, is up to shenanigans all the time. So people in Seattle are trying to camp all day and eat granola, and the Spokane vote's ruining everything. This is another thing.
I think this goes to your point. I mean, this is a little different in the sense that the district that you're talking about sort of like is mostly Republican. But some of the places.
But it's not.
Some of those specific areas. But like the county itself, I think, or is a swing county anyway.
It's a swing county now.
The county, but the congressional district has more Democrats than Republicans.
Yeah. And this is the same thing. Like this is a district that has been represented by a Republican for a while, who Obama twice and Clinton once won.
You know?
I mean, it's a suburban district that's filled with mostly Democrats that was being represented in the state house by a Republican.
Yeah.
So the Democrats were finally like, oh, you know what? We should run someone for that.
Right. Well, because I know in our situation, because they don't run candidates, we have one state senator whose district went from being a Republican district to a Democratic district. But the word on the street was he was unbeatable. So nobody paid attention to it.
Well, if you can't beat him, then you can't.
So he ran unopposed for two elections. Yeah. And then the third one, it started so late in the game. Yeah. But it's like...
Right. Why let that guy just sit there poorly representing the people who are clearly not even bothering to vote?
And not only that, and I heard this like in 2004, and then it happened again this past year, where at the Democratic banquet that they have every year... people heard the Democrats saying to each other, oh, you don't need to vote for her. Vote for the guy who has the job.
He's not so bad.
He's not so bad. Oh, you know, that's really, that's a little challenging.
That's when you know.
Boy. Yeah.
But this, I also think people, the money thing frustrates me because I think if you are in a small district, where you're not going to, maybe you're not going to win. Maybe the opponent has $1 zillion and they're going to pepper you with whatever. It feels like someone could maybe just be making the effort to run with no money. You know, yeah. like to run. Like, right. you might as well try. What if right. you accidentally win? Yeah. What yeah. You know, you're establishing a sort of infrastructure for someone to run in the future, yeah. and you kind of have to do that in order to be successful.
Yeah.
You need to have lessons that you've learned in order to run successfully yeah. in a district. If you're not running people for free money, you know, for basically free, and the state party could pay for people to run basic campaigns in these places, right. you're not going to learn the lessons you need to learn to yeah. win these places.
Well, yeah. We learned another thing with our candidate for town board. We thought, gee, it'd be kind of nice to have some money for this. So Lila's father and I are known as good cooks, and we're known. Yeah. We usually have a party every summer. This year we hadn't planned to, but we thought, well, we'll have a party, but we'll ask everybody to donate $25 to the campaign,
yeah.
thinking we'd raise, you know, maybe a couple of hundred dollars to help, yeah. you know, all that. Because the Democratic Party actually also gave her money and all that. We raised $2,000.
Yeah.
Gosh. You know, and that right. was in this tiny town. People right. and
just
not,
having people over to the house.
Just having people over.
For the party you throw every summer.
For the party we have.
Yeah.
You know, it's the last time it's going to be a free party.
Right.
but, right, yeah.
But it was just, I mean, we were blown away by this. And right. it gave our candidate so much more freedom to,
yeah.
you know, to do yeah. the things she needed
yeah.
to do.
Yeah.
That's... No, it's, if you're creative about fundraising in these kind of trying times too,
yeah.
people are mm-hmm. trying to do something.
Why? Yeah, exactly.
But so in any case, and then we also saw in Manchester, New Hampshire, they elected their first female mayor.
Yeah. And that was, yeah. That's
unseated a four-term Republican.
Right. Exactly. That's the biggest city
in New Hampshire.
New Hampshire. Which is, and yeah. So it's
kind of nowhere, but it's in New Hampshire.
Sure. Yeah. Right.
Well, it's also a significant state.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
It's
yeah.
not just a swing
just
state.
Swing state. It's
the next. Yeah. It's yeah. the other Iowa.
That's right. Yes.
Yeah. But so in any case, that was an exciting
yeah.
turn of events.
Yeah. It
for
really
this election day.
Like...
After a year of stress.
Right.
And
I know.
Frustration.
Yeah.
And a year of everyone having to have the Facebook reminder be like, 1 year ago today.
I know.
And it was like them hope, you know, with their yeah. I voted sticker being like, hope we, you know, so
know.
Excited to have a female president.
Yeah.
This was at least a
yeah.
a palate
right.
cleanser
right,
for
exactly.
that.
Yeah.
But also speaking of other elections.
Yeah.
Roy Moore, who's running, who has now kind of unseated Luther Strange in and is running in the general in Alabama,
yeah.
was revealed to be a bit of a pedophile over this week.
Yeah, who was surprised by that?
Zero no people.
Nobody. Yeah.
The Washington Post published a story this week where four women came forward and said that Moore had pursued relationships with them when they were in their teens.
Yeah. These people, I heard an interview with the woman who wrote the story for the Washington Post on NPR, and she pointed out that none of these women knew each other, which isn't
right.
necessarily important, but it kind of is in the sense that it wasn't like four, you know,
women
ladies
got together
over, you know, a glass of wine and decided that Roy Moore was a pederast 40 years ago.
Right, these
ago.
Are four women like... who independently, not knowing that there were other women who had gone through this, chose to come forward.
Right. Yeah.
Which is significant only because you end up as a woman doing that with the burden of
yeah.
proof on you.
Right.
And so you end up with a character assassination
exactly.
on your
yeah.
hands. And so you have to be strong enough to do that.
Right. And for the same reason that this next bit of information
right.
should not be important either. But Lee Korfman, who was the one who was 14 at the time, is also a Republican. She's been voting Republican since the
yeah.
beginning of
trying
days.
To
and she
protect those Stonewall Jackson.
She voted for Donald Trump. She yeah, somebody found a Facebook post of hers where she had just purchased like some statue of Stonewall Jackson.
Yeah.
So again, you shouldn't it shouldn't matter in that whether, you know, like whether we believe her or not. But
right.
like it's,
but it's
you know,
Alabama,
Roy Moore, well,
so.
Well, but, and also, you know, Roy Moore has been talking about how this is all politically motivated, and that sort of, I feel
blows
like,
blows up that theory a little bit, yeah.
Theory. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, because it sounds
yeah.
like she would love to vote for this guy based
oh, yeah.
on his,
right.
on
Yeah,
on
she's
his
not
ideas.
Down there, like, you know, working in the Doug Jones campaign
no,
or anything.
No, exactly.
You know, like, that's not her plan right now.
Yeah. Roy Moore's feelings have been hurt
yeah.
by these accusations, which is sad, I guess,
yeah.
if you're Roy Moore.
Yeah, he'd really like an apology, too.
He would love an apology.
Yeah.
Because how dare they accuse him
yeah.
of doing something that he almost definitely did and that no one has to stretch their imagination at all
yeah.
to believe happened.
Right.
That was inappropriate.
Yeah.
A good Christian man like Roy Moore.
Yeah.
Can you believe
it? That's why I believe it, by the way.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, no, because also I think one of the things that happens in a situation like this, he had a problem, and so how he solved it was he found God.
Yes,
and
of course.
Once he found 100%. God, then the problem was over.
Yes. And it also helps to, after the fact, prove that he couldn't have possibly, because at that time, well, and we're still, you know, hopefully maybe getting past that time, but I mean, you know, we were believing the men in these situations.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
know, but, up, but until, also, up until maybe a month ago.
Exactly. So, exactly. You know, exactly. But with him also, I mean, there's no sense of the damage it did with these women.
No.
No.
Right.
I mean,
oh, no, of course not. No.
You know, and the fact that in Alabama, they think it's worse to vote for a Democrat than it is to vote for a pedophile is outrageous.
Yeah, I know. Listen, well, I have been
Alabama's
telling...
had some sex scandal situations.
Oh, yeah.
They're not afraid of a sex scandal.
Yeah, exactly.
They're not afraid of a sex scandal in Alabama.
Yeah. I mean, this is he would be the third that they have elected in a row of these...
Oh, boy.
That's them.
Yikes.
Meanwhile, Roy Moore has been famous for years for dating younger women. And when we say younger women, we mean teenagers.
We mean teenagers.
We don't mean younger women like women who are 25.
Yeah, the most shocking thing about this is that... Or least shocking thing, potentially. But is that, you know, he's been sort of issuing some questionable denials this
week.
That
are not really denials and are more him gloating about how he used to date younger women.
I know. Yeah, exactly. Because he was... Well, also... A person who used to work with him at the time came out and was sort of like, hey, guys, this was what was happening. Like, everybody knew it. We all knew it.
It was common knowledge that Roy dated high school girls. Everyone we knew thought it was weird. We wondered why someone his age would hang out at high school football games and the mall. But you wouldn't really say anything to someone like that. I mean, would you not?
You not? I know, right? Like,
you wouldn't have then.
Now you
would.
Hopefully now we all know we should.
Yeah.
Right.
Hopefully men
in
this situation won't be confused anymore about whether they can say something about this behavior.
Yeah.
You can.
Right. You can.
You can be like, stop dating teenagers, jerk.
You can. Yeah.
Whatever.
And
you call
I would
the
hope
judge.
That we're also sort of like living in an age where if you're 30, maybe you're thinking twice about going to a high school football game.
First of all,
unless you have a kid.
Well, unless you're ready. Yeah, exactly.
I would contend that if you're any age, you shouldn't go to a high school football game.
That's
I would contend that you shouldn't go to a football game. But if you find yourself at a high school football game and your only interest in that game
is maybe some of the 14-year-old cheerleaders.
Right, some of the cheerleaders. Like, think about your life.
Yeah.
Reassess.
Yeah. Find God.
Find God if you need to.
Or don't. No, I mean...
Yeah, finding God seems to be a common thread here. That's a problem.
But also, the fact that they're saying, well, Mary was a teenager.
I know. Oh, my God.
Yeah, those comments have been amazing.
The Virgin Mary was a teenager, but Joseph... And so... You know, like they're throwing that.
Yeah, they're trying to blow up age of consent arguments by arguing about biblical stories about virgins.
I know. Well, the first thing that I did when I heard the story was Google what the age of consent was in Alabama because I was certain that they probably just didn't have one, and then I was shocked to find that it was 16.
Yeah.
Good for them.
Yeah.
Alabama.
Well,
I
don't know.
Me every turn.
Yeah, but no, I think 16 is
well,
way
no,
too
I know.
Young
I know.
For
yes, but
consent.
I mean, yeah.
But for Alabama, that seems very progressive.
It seems like they were maybe trying.
Yeah.
Right? You know? Like,
yeah, they established one.
Right, yeah, exactly.
An age.
Right, they thought of it.
Yeah, they thought of the age. They put it into law. But so in any case, Roy Moore is pretty concerned that, you know, he finds it a little suspicious that these women all came forward 40 years later.
Yeah.
He apparently doesn't understand why you would do that because he's an asshole, so he wouldn't understand.
Right.
It.
Well, I mean, you know, he is, he can only see sort of like past his own sort of
and
point.
He doesn't remember dating any girl without the permission of their mother.
That weird?
Wasn't that so? He
that
so he
is
did
so
right.
strange.
So he did this interview on Sean Hannity's radio show, and I don't really think that he helped himself much.
Nope. Or Sean Hannity.
Or Sean.
Nobody was helped by that interview.
No, nobody was helped because he said that he did not date anybody without the permission of their mother. And
here's what you're trying to say.
But what I'm trying to say is that if you're a 30-year-old and you're dating an age-appropriate woman, you don't have to ask their freaking mother.
Yeah. Right. Once you're dating someone age-appropriate as an adult, they are also an adult, so no one's mother has to be involved.
I'm sure he thought that was sort of like some kind of like folksy Southern thing to say and maybe do. You know how like men will ask, you know, fathers for their hands in marriage
or something.
But like
in
this
pederasty
scenario, like... Where it was, in the context of what it was being discussed about, it felt really gross.
makes you wonder more about Alabama. Every piece of information we've had in this story has made me wonder more and more about Alabama.
I know. Also, if you have, I for the first time, actually, this week, heard Roy Moore speak.
Yes, I don't know. I had never
heard him. You hear
I don't think that, I have,
It's not great.
You don't want to hear him speak.
No.
It's not what you're not looking good. For.
No.
It's not it.
Yeah.
But you said your favorite moment of this entire interview, which I think is probably the thing, the sort of pièce de résistance.
It's been the takeaway for everyone.
The major takeaway for everyone.
Yeah. Sean Hannity asked him if he dated teenagers, and he said, not generally, no. Which is
specifically
amazing.
Yes.
All right. Specifically, in this case, yes. But generally, no. Right. No. He also said that he dated a lot of young ladies
when he returned from the military.
Yes. Uh huh.
You know how when you're back from the military, you have to be a pederast, or you have no choice. Didn't he give this interview on Veterans Day?
He gave a speech
on Veterans Day.
Yeah, oh, right.
About like veterans. Feelings. It was like two veterans.
That and was where he said his feelings were hurt.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. It was a very sort of like Trump move of him to like go and like supposed to be speaking about one thing and then like
turning it into a national holiday for a patriot, you know, to celebrate veterans, turned it into like a thing about his detractors.
Yeah. Well, and he also said that there's going to be some revelations, guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a real Trump move.
People are looking into it. And we're going to find out things about that story and some of those ladies.
That's right.
Yeah.
Which I think he, maybe in Alabama, hadn't heard that we're used to finding out something about those ladies. In every one of these stories, that's been what's happened. That's what's finally bringing Harvey Weinstein down is the creepiness of him hiring PIs to go try to, you know, discredit all the ladies who were trying to accuse him of sexual assault. Yeah. Like, this is, of course we're going to find out things about the ladies. That's what happens after they make the allegations. No one's going to be like, well, I'm sorry, I didn't expect to find out something salacious about their past. Like, of course that's what we're going to find.
Right.
And you know what? I think we should decide as a society not to care.
That we don't care. Well, obviously. Yeah.
And if we find anything super salacious, I think we can maybe tag it back to how they were assaulted by an adult in their teenage years.
Yeah.
Right.
A man in power.
Yeah. Exactly. A judge.
Yeah.
Okay. Who's now going to be in the Senate.
Who's, by the way, side but related note, who's been removed from the bench twice.
Yeah. Correct. Yes.
So.
Oft forgotten and yet so important tidbit.
Yeah.
Sean Hannity, though, is also feeling the blowback of this story for being stupid enough to have this interview on his airwaves in the first place, because of course he had the wrong reaction to it.
Right. Well, so in a segment that wasn't the actual interview with Roy Moore, they were talking about this.
Right.
And I think they were talking about it in the context of whether they would be able to find out if it was true or not. Because one of the things that all the Republicans have been saying, except
how
the,
are we gonna
few,
prove this?
Right, exactly, is that Roy Moore should step aside if this is true. But it's like, we can't know now whether it's true. And so you're basically deciding on a he said, she said, and you're...
Well, and also, this is not a court of law. But we can decide as a society what is and is not socially acceptable to us, and it doesn't have to meet the burden of proof
and it doesn't
of a court of law.
Right, exactly. It doesn't have to, yes. And I didn't mean to, when I said he said, she said, I didn't mean to imply that, like, you know, we could just pick and choose who we believe
in this situation. We have no proof that any of this happened.
So, like, for Mitch McConnell to say he should step aside
if it's true
is basically him
saying,
just
go
getting
ahead,
out of the, stepping away from the issue.
Go ahead and do what you're going to do, Roy Moore.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So anyway, so they were talking about that, and they were basically saying, like, there's no way to know. Like, you know, this was 40 years ago. She was 14. And then, like, one of his other guests was like, yes, and it was consensual. And then Sean Hannity goes, yes, it was consensual. That's true. I think that's what he said,
you got it.
Oh, good.
You remembered the line perfectly.
Yeah. But, you know, Sean Hannity... You can't be having consensual sex with 14-year-olds.
That's what the age of consent laws are all about.
That's it.
And as we just learned, they have them in Alabama.
That's right. Yeah. So, and they're above 14, I would assume, literally everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The only reason to have an age of consent law would be to have it be above 14.
Right, exactly. Like, yes. Yeah.
You either aren't going to have one.
You wouldn't set
one for 12.
You wouldn't set it that low. No.
Like,
you
wouldn't. But so in any case, Sean Hannity forgot, apparently, that the point that it was consensual is a moot point because there is no such thing as consensual sex with a 14-year-old if you are a grown person.
Yeah. So what seemed like a...
Or even if you're a 14-year-old.
Well, right.
There are plenty 14. Of boys yeah. who've gone to jail
yeah.
because they had consensual sex, you yeah. know, when they were both underage.
Yeah. Yeah, I
and
think
the
so.
Boys still
I think
went
in,
to jail.
In some that. States, I think if they're both underage, there are, like, laws about,
yeah.
like,
or
age
if they're within
differences.
2 years.
But not every state had yeah. those, no, for sure. But, yeah. So, in a very un-Hannity-like move, he quasi-apologized yeah. for it, where he...
And then tried to claim that he was only referring to Moore's interactions
with
17
and
18-year-olds, which,
like,
is not true.
Right, because if they were literally in the middle of
a
conversation about 14-year-olds. Like, so, I mean, he may have been confused in the moment when he was talking about consensual sex. Like, maybe that I would believe, but regardless, that's not what was actually happening. So no. he's lying to you in his apology. But the real reason that he's apologizing, let's
yeah.
not kid ourselves, is because all of his advertisers are leaving.
That's right. We're pulling a Fox News on him. Like, Fox, I feel like this is
yeah.
the only way that you take down a Fox News personality.
Right, it is. Yeah.
Is you get the mattress.com has to right. leave or whatever right. it is.
Yeah.
But he's lost a plus size clothing retailer who uh-huh. I can't pronounce the name of.
Sure.
23andMe, Nature's Bounty, Keurig, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. Realtor.com. And have
yeah.
you seen those pictures of Republicans smashing their Keurig machines?
No.
That's been
amazing.
My favorite thing. Like, first of all.
Oh, God.
Don't buy a Keurig machine, you guys. It's easy to make coffee.
It is. They're bad for the environment,
They're
too.
Not good for the environment.
You can't recycle those cups.
Yeah, which is probably why they love them.
Probably.
But second of all, if you spent the money on a Keurig machine, don't smash it because they're not going to advertise on Sean Hannity. Let him fight his own battle
right.
with Keurig, for
yeah.
God's sakes.
Yeah.
But so, I'm not shocked, but I guess I am shocked that 23andMe and other DNA companies advertise on conservative talk radio, and now that I think about it, it makes perfect sense because they all want to prove their Aryan-ness. But it hadn't occurred to me that would be like a clear target market for
yeah, me
for
either.
23andMe. Who yeah. knew? It's people that
it's fascinating.
Have really exciting ethnic backgrounds, and then people that want to prove that they're pure Aryan
right.
asshole.
Yeah.
In any case, a bunch of Senate Republicans have actually tried to distance
right.
themselves.
Right,
from
and
Roy
there
Moore.
Have been, it's been sort of like a slow trickle,
yeah.
but
I think
there will be
more. It's related to
more.
Them loving Luther Strange and not loving Roy Moore.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, they never wanted
him to be the
they
candidate.
They didn't want anything to do with this guy in the first place. So this, I think, is just sort of like giving them an out on some level. But they also don't want to lose the seat. So I actually read something earlier in the day that they're sort of like trying to get some other ways, maybe like do an end around on this
mm-hmm.
where like literally like have the governor not seat him or if he
yeah.
ends up winning or to push the special election because she can set the date. I mean, she could just move it while they sort of like try it because it's coming up.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the beginning yes. of December.
Right.
December
20th. So yeah. So they're trying to sort of like maybe figure out what to do if they can't get him to just actually
oddly,
leave the ticket of his own volition.
The race is tightening.
Well, yeah,
and
exactly.
it's Alabama, so that's unexpected.
It is.
That's not what
well,
you...
Well, the race was tightening before
it,
this
Well,
opened.
It was.
Well, because
yeah.
he's a lunatic.
Right.
Yeah.
But I mean, once you
and
have
also,
a race that's already
he was
tightening...
Not, he didn't win that primary because people liked him or wanted him to win. He won that primary because they didn't like Luther Strange. Because what happened with Luther
what?
Strange was that he was the attorney general,
yes.
and he was supposed to investigate the Love Gov,
right.
mm-hmm.
and the Love Gov
appointed
him to the
him.
Senate.
Yes, because Strange was was appointed. Yeah,
and so that stopped that investigation, and
yeah.
the people of Alabama were very clear on what that
yeah.
was about.
Yeah,
so it wasn't even that anybody really.
Yeah.
Loved Roy
wanted
Moore.
Him,
yeah.
right.
right.
But also, I mean, his son keeps getting arrested. Have you heard about that?
Yes.
No. Oh,
I
have. Oh,
yes. Yeah.
Yeah, he got arrested like last week or the week
yeah,
before, though. Yeah.
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 yeah. Very recently,
yeah.
and it wasn't the first time. It was
yeah.
like, God. Yeah. This
guy's
yeah.
trouble, you guys.
Yeah, he is.
Roy Moore.
Yeah.
yeah.
He's trouble.
Yeah, boy.
Luckily, one thing's off our plate.
right.
Don't worry, you guys. Russia did not hack the elections.
Right.
Putin said so.
Yeah.
And he wouldn't lie to us.
No.
No.
Got it.
So Trump and Putin are at the Asia-Pacific summit last
sure.
week.
Yeah.
They are taking little sidebars together.
Yeah, they don't have an official meeting.
They don't have an official meeting, but they take
yeah.
little sidebars together. And then yesterday, Trump had been sort of sitting on this information. And then you could tell he was going to explode at some point.
sure.
And so he finally did on Saturday.
Yeah.
Where he said, in a series of highly quotable quotes that we're going to quote for you because of their quotability, that Putin said that Russia didn't meddle in the election. So case closed.
Yeah.
Right?
That's it.
So he's flying around Vietnam on Saturday, just mm-hmm. like visiting Hanoi or whatever he was up to. And lets out a series, you know, he's talking to the press on the plane or whatever. He lets out a series of comments about this matter.
Yeah.
All of which contradict our own intelligence agency's findings on the matter.
Yeah.
And then goes on to talk about how he thinks Putin has been very insulted by our insinuations.
Oh, but
Putin's feelings are at the top of my mind usually in these situations.
Roy Moore.
Yeah, exactly. I'm feeling sad this week.
Yeah.
It's been a bad week for powerful white men who've done wrong things. He said, I'm just going to read some of these quotes.
Yeah,
they're all great. There was no collusion. Everybody knows there was no collusion. I think it's a shame that something like that could destroy a very important potential relationship between two countries that are really important countries. Then he said, He said he didn't meddle. I asked him again. You can only ask so many times. Every time he sees me, he says, I didn't do that. And I really believe that when he tells me, he means it. He also said,
You can only ask so many times. Right?
So he was asked why then our intelligence community seems to believe that this happened when Putin has been denying it.
Yeah.
And he said, I mean, give me a break. They're political hacks. So you look at it, I mean, you have Brennan, you have Clapper, and you have Comey. Comey's proven now to be a liar, and he's proven now to be a leaker. So you look at that, and you have President Putin very strongly, vehemently says he has nothing to do with them. So then he tried to pivot into it being a conspiracy invented by the Democrats, which is his usual move after this.
Yep.
Hilariously, Putin's spokesperson was like, oh, they never discussed that matter. So, and this is right before Trump comes out with his long thing about how Putin's been denying it.
Yeah.
On Sunday, today, he had to clarify.
Well, he had to clarify after a lot of members of his own party
were like,
and the head of the CIA and the FBI. Well, we don't.
Mike Pompeo was like,
it was like, maybe.
Not quite.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
So then today he says, I believe that he feels that he and Russia did not meddle in the election. As to whether I believe it or not, I'm with our agencies, especially as currently constituted with the leadership.
What? Who? Huh?
First of all, not English.
Right.
Second of all,
I think he was talking about himself.
I think he's saying, I trust them now that I'm the president.
Oh, I see.
But he was saying it in weird Sarah Palin terminology.
Now that I've forced them all to take oaths of...
This is, to me, I trust them. Clear Sarah Palin phrasing right there.
Mm-hmm.
So that worries me a little bit because it means he's getting loonier. Or maybe he's becoming a better poet. I'm willing to accept either one.
Yeah.
In any case, he also said, I believe that our intel agencies, I work with them very strongly, as currently led by fine people. Mm-hmm. I believe very much in our intelligence agencies.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
So several comments that were not in English after his own intelligence agencies were like, no, guy.
Yeah.
After he was so sad that Putin was being insulted by our insinuations that he meddled in the election.
Yeah.
So sad, all these insults flying.
Also, we now actually officially know that they did.
Exactly.
At a certain point, like, he was able to sort of, like, we didn't actually know that, you know, they had been funding ads on Facebook and Twitter and doing some of the things that we now, like,
until now,
actually know that they did. So he was sort of, yes, we sort of suspected that they were up to things, and we sort of, like, had some sort of, like, half proof that
and
they were up
like
to some things.
For
but
a company,
was,
for a country
right.
that wasn't meddling, they were making
right.
a lot of contact
right.
with the presidential
exactly.
campaign.
Right. But for a while, he was sort of like, whether we believed him or not, he was sort of like able to get away with being like, Russia didn't meddle.
Right.
Like, but
now we know.
We're beyond
the point
where he can just be like, well, Putin told me, so they didn't, because we officially know that they did.
Yeah.
So.
Based on his own intelligence agency's findings.
Right.
Because he is now the president, not Obama. So
right.
there's no way for him to deny that the intelligence agencies, as constituted under him, as he might say it,
right.
Are lying. Meanwhile, he also found time during this Asia tour to remind us how wonderful it is to golf at Trump golf courses.
Mm-hmm. And how wonderful Asian golfers are.
Exactly. He was delivering a speech in South Korea about North Korea.
Mm-hmm.
He hilariously went on a weird rant about how North Korean women are forced to abort babies that are, quote, considered ethnically inferior, and how China shouldn't help them because of this. And I was like, this is not why China shouldn't help North Korea.
Right.
Like, this is bad if it's true, but it's not why North Korea is a problem on the international
right,
scene.
Right, right.
Like, this is a weird thing for you to pick up. He went on a whole thing about how North Korea is a cult also.
Mm-hmm.
He obviously threatened them a lot and said that they can't have the bomb and that we're going to take them down if they do have the bomb.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite line, though, because it sounds directly out of the communist leader playbook, was when he said, History is filled with discarded regimes that have foolishly tested America's resolve.
Oh, my.
That sounds like Kim Jong-un said it.
Right. Yeah.
That's what a communist leader says.
Yeah.
That's the phrasing, foolishly test the America's resolve. That's what you say when you're a communist. I mean, for God's sakes, guy. Try a little harder.
Oh, boy.
In any case, but you'll be happy to know that not only are his golf courses wonderful, but the...
Korean golfers are some of the best on earth.
Some of the best on earth. The Women's U.S. Open was held at Trump National Golf Course in Bedminster, and it just happened to be won by a great Korean golfer.
Yeah, but you know, the other part of this that was really very frustrating is he gave the speech right at the time when the election results were coming out on the East Coast.
Oh, yeah, you said that.
Everybody, you know, like, and the thing was, it probably was planned for for it being a much longer, taking much longer to
right.
figure
it was
it
longer
out.
Night, yeah.
But it was when suddenly people, like we had come home from the election thing, and we went to the television to watch, and here's the speech, and he was rambling on and on and on. It was like the speech he gave about the stakes when he was talking about
my favorite Trump speech. Uh-huh.
And it was just, it was outrageous because... You
were trying to watch election results.
Yeah, people were trying.
And he's not saying anything in this speech.
No, and it was...
We know he loves his golf courses. That's not news.
But I assume that he picked that time, and he did it then specifically to take people's attention. I don't know why CNN and MSNBC, you know, chose
to show it because it was
just...
Ratings.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think, no, they would have been losing ratings because it was just this rambling on crazy speech about golf resorts and that type of thing.
I wonder if there's like something like what your favorite Trump speech says about you. I feel like there's a BuzzFeed quiz here, right?
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Yeah, because there's the Boy Scouts.
Yeah,
there's
because
the Trump
that's my favorite.
That's yours,
and I don't know what it I don't know what that means, but I bet it means something.
I know. I wonder what Trump
steaks. Ask my therapist this week.
Oh, good question. Yeah, we should get to the bottom of this. We should all ask your therapist. So, moving on.
Yeah.
Bad news, guys. You know how Mitch McConnell promised that if you're middle class, your taxes are definitely going down under their plan?
Yeah.
He's not so sure.
He misspoke.
He misspoke.
Yeah.
It's not what he meant to say. And in fact, he said it before he knew what the plan was. So it was also not information he was yet at liberty to give. Because he told MSNBC earlier this month, before the plan was actually unveiled, that at the end of the day, no one in the middle class is going to see a tax increase.
Mm-hmm.
On Friday, he told the New York Times, "I misspoke on that. You can't guarantee that absolutely no one sees a tax increase."
Mm.
That's because he knows, and according to the Times' own investigation into this, that a lot of people actually will be getting a tax increase.
That's right.
Including, at the very beginning, about a quarter of middle class earners.
Mm-hmm.
And that will go up. That'll go up to about a third of middle class earners. Now, that's partially because the Senate bill keeps the elimination of state and local tax deductions.
Right, write-offs. Yeah, exactly.
I said that so many double negatives that it's not clear. But you can't write, under their bill, you can't write off your state and local taxes. So if you live in a high tax state, sucks to be you. And this actually didn't get through the House because finally a bunch of California and other big state representatives who are Republicans were like, oh.
Right, New York, New Jersey is a high tax state.
Like Kevin McCarthy, Illinois. Daryl Issa. Like these are all people whose constituents were like, excuse me, guy.
Exactly.
And then they had to be like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
But in the Senate, they don't have this problem because Democratic states are repped by Democrats for the most part. And Republican states who have low taxes are repped by Republicans. So they can do whatever old nonsense they want.
Sure.
They also, in their bill, have a one-year delay in cutting the corporate tax rate, which is just to make us forget that they're going to do that so that we forget how it happened when it happens the next year. And then they are going to keep the estate tax, but just alter it slightly so that rich people don't have to pay as much as they have to pay under the current estate tax.
Right.
But they're at least not eliminating it entirely, in part because this bill, even as written, doesn't meet the requirement that it not add to the deficit after 10 years.
Well, it's going
to
add like over $1 trillion.
Yeah. And that's why they had to keep the state and local tax deduction thing, because it's going to add like $1 zillion, or as you might have said it, $1 trillion to the deficit. And they're not allowed to vote on it as a reconciliation bill if it does that.
Yeah.
So the bill that they finally agree on with the House and the Senate, I don't know where they're going to find the savings because they're cutting taxes so dramatically.
Yeah.
And the House bill also doesn't meet this requirement. But the reason that they eliminated the state and local tax deduction thing, which is one of the only savings measures in the Senate bill, is because they're not going to be able to get it passed in the House. So,
exactly. Well, and also it seems like they're going to have to go to conference on this.
Yes. They're about to.
Well, they're about to. Right. Because they
already
have.
Well, it's going to happen.
They're trying to get this passed before the end of the year. It doesn't seem like that's probably a possibility, but that was like their big rush was to sort of like have, you know, ended the year passing like one piece of legislation, which they haven't.
I know.
But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see whether they can come to an agreement on this, because like it seems like there's potential that this has some of the same pitfalls that some of the other legislation that they've.
This is literally by 2026, a third of the middle class is going to see their taxes go up by an average of $1,600.
Yeah,
that's non-insignificant money.
Of course,
oh my is significant money. Right. Insignificant money, but that's a not insignificant amount of money.
Yeah.
And a quarter of the middle class is going to see an increase in 2018 by an average of $1,000.
Yeah,
that's almost $100 a month. Just coming right out of your pocket,
right?
You know,
yep.
You, a middle class person who can barely afford to do anything because housing costs $1 zillion and food is $1 zillion. Chicken in California costs $1 million, as my mom never tires of reminding me. And you know, everything else gets more expensive by the moment.
Yep.
And who knows how long the stock market's going to hold on because Donald Trump is the president. I mean, nothing makes any sense anymore. And yet that's $100 that's going to come out of your pocket every month just because idiots want to give tax cuts to corporations and CEOs. I mean, tell them to go fuck themselves.
Yeah.
Call your congressman right now and tell them that if they are not against this tax bill, they can go screw themselves.
Yeah. Well, and one of the other things that just in talking about the state and local taxes that whether you're going to be able to continue to write those off. One of the things that is important about that is that also in some of these high tax states, your property tax is one of those state or local taxes. So it also
screws over homeowners.
Exactly. So if you have high property taxes, that's really terrible for homeowners. So you're going to have people having issues with that. And it also is going to, you know, it's going to keep people from purchasing homes too. If you can't write off, I think one of the either the Senate or the House bill sort of like left it in, but like capped it at a certain amount of money, like what you could write off for your home insurance.
But if you live in a market that's out of control, you don't have the option of
Exactly.
You know, like I mean, if you live in a market like this where houses cost $1 million, that's you live here. This is. Your job is here. Your home is here. This is where you live.
Yeah.
Like, you can't do anything about that.
Right. So that's a huge problem, just besides the fact that you can't, you know, generally write off your state and local taxes. But, like, you know, everybody is – that's what being in the middle class is, supposedly, anyway. You know, part of the middle class dream is being able to own a home.
And certainly,
granted,
they're trying to
– we live in California, so we can't anyway. But, like, you know, like, that's – so once you're not being able to do that, like – is that really what they want? I mean, maybe it is. I don't know. But
well, they also have another problem that's kind of seeping into the ether, and that's the Paradise Papers.
Yes. I know. At some point, we have to do a deep dive into the Paradise Papers.
Yeah.
And but the thing with the Paradise Papers is it's not only just rich people; it's half the cabinet.
Yeah.
Oh, sure.
Trump's cabinet.
Right. So we all are discovering just how beneficial these tax cuts will be for them.
Right.
Right. But also
and where their money is.
Their money is not here.
Yeah.
Their money is offshore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yes, they're not paying taxes on that anyway.
Right.
No,
exactly.
Right. So I mean, this it's ludicrous.
Yeah. Yeah. Exciting times, guys.
Yeah.
And final news: that gunman in gunman.
Yeah, sure.
Gunman.
It's a gunman
in Texas who shot up that church in Sutherland Springs. The Air Force isn't sure why he was able to get a gun or why they failed to report his domestic violence charges.
Yeah.
Because he's a man who was not supposed to be able to pass a background check.
That's right.
He had a history of mental health issues, a history of domestic violence, a history of all the kinds of things that would lead you to believe that he's the exact kind of person who might shoot up a church.
Right.
And then he did it. So he delivered.
He did.
And yet we sold
him
guns.
Proved him all right.
Proved him all right. We sold him the guns.
Yeah.
So the Air Force is now in an investigation about that. But it reminds us of another thing, which is that our background check system is imperfect and should be better.
That's right.
So as much as, and listen, background checks work when they work, you know, like it is not like we should eliminate the background check system because it's not working.
No,
Republicans often
them.
Like to claim that things that don't work, like, well, we don't know if this is going to fix climate change, so let's not try. We don't know if this is going to stop gun violence, so let's not do anything,
right.
You know, but we should try, but we should really think about how we can address our background check system so that the records are consistent and up to date and that idiots don't get guns.
Yeah. Like, this seems like something that you could fix.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, this doesn't seem
and
like it would have to be hard.
That we have to fix. Because giving guns to idiots is deadly for innocent people who are just trying to go to church.
That's right.
You just do whatever you do in a church. And I wouldn't know what that is, but it sounds like they weren't killing each other in there. So that's all I ask.
Yeah.
You know?
But also, I think another part of it that's very frustrating is that they aren't looking for the root cause. They keep saying, you know, they keep using this excuse of mental illness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the majority of people with mental illness are not, if they're violent, it's to themselves. It's not to others.
Sure.
And so it's, but there are all these people who have a history of domestic violence. And, you know, sometimes and it starts with animals and then women and then, and it's mainly men. It's not, you know, women are not, don't do this. And until we say that we want to make sure that those people don't get guns, we're not going to get anywhere with this. Because to just say, well, they're mentally ill. You know, he, it turned out, was mentally ill. But the guy in Las Vegas, there was no...
I would also contend that shooting something up makes you mentally ill. So after the fact, it's easy to say that they were mentally ill because they did something crazy.
Yeah,
but that doesn't mean that you know, putting that all on mentally ill people is something like there has to be a way for this, a way to, first of all, sort of quench this weird rage that seems to exist among these young white men or middle-aged white men, as the guy in Vegas was.
Yeah.
Like that doesn't rely on us just deciding that, well, they were crazy. So they like this is part, this is an ideology.
Right.
When you are willing to shoot up something like this, that I think we should start considering it, because I consider it domestic terrorism. I think we can all agree it's domestic terrorism. Yeah. This is an ideology, this idea that when you're so upset and feel so alone as a white man, it is your right to go and terrorize everybody.
Yeah.
Right. You know, that's a consistent ideology with all of these people. That has been consistent in, you know, even in these attacks that we have then blamed on foreign terrorism, like the Pulse attack. Which was once again an American guy who felt alone and felt lonely and thought it was his right to go shoot up a bunch of less powerful people.
Yep.
And that is an ideology. That he was not a terrorist because he was Muslim. He was a terrorist because he was a part of this American idea that these men seem to have that they should do this.
And, but also, there's some easy fixes to this. One is if you know... There's got to be a way to see when all these guns are going to one individual.
Well,
what they're using them for.
Yeah, you should be able to say, well, wait a minute. Why does this one guy, why is he having 16 deliveries of guns in 2 weeks or whatever?
Yeah.
There's got to be some tracking of that. But there also has got to be, I think, one of the ways to deal with this is we've got to require insurance on guns.
Yes.
Not on the people, but on the guns themselves to pay for the damage.
Well, this because this is also a public health crisis. Yeah,
who is paying? You know, in Sutherland Springs.
Yeah,
Sutherland Springs. Yeah. Who's paying those people for all?
In Vegas, who's paying the medical bills for those people? They all had to set up fucking GoFundMes
because
no one
ridiculous.
Had any way of paying for the medical bills. It shouldn't be on you to pay for a medical bill because you were in a mass shooting.
You know, if we can require that of cars, why can't we require it of guns?
Yeah.
And it should be national. It shouldn't be state by state. It should be something that is, you know, that should be done in Congress. And, you know, my feeling is the insurance companies, if healthcare goes the way it's probably going to go, they're going to need something to help them out. Well, give them guns. You know, let them do that. They'd be brilliant at it. They wouldn't let those people, they would find out if somebody's gotten 16 guns in the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, exactly. Because they can find out if you've gotten, three blood tests in the last few weeks, and they will bill you for each and every one of them.
Exactly.
They have no way of, you know, no problem.
But I don't understand why there isn't more of a move to do some practical things.
Right.
Yeah. Well, and that's a great thing because it's a money-making opportunity.
Yeah.
My mom is really good at developing money-making arguments to solve problems that
like
shouldn't
that.
Be unsolvable. You know, that's when we talk about healthcare for all being a money-making opportunity because it
for
will save
businesses,
business money.
Right.
It's a pro-business idea. That idea started with a conversation that I had with her. Like, she's good at finding the money in these situations.
Yeah.
I feel like...
Well, because tragically, that's what everyone cares about.
yeah, if we're going to be in America, let's do
right?
it.
Right? Yeah,
know?
Exactly. Yeah. Or yeah, you we gotta could just... You got to figure out how to sell these ideas to people,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's right. a sales idea.
Yeah.
Or we could go with Brent and I's idea of just having government goons come into everyone's houses and take away their guns.
Yes. Yeah,
you know,
less
whatever
likely,
works
but
for
I'm
everyone.
Still in favor of it.
Yeah, exactly.
And make them into musical instruments.
Yeah, right. exactly. Yeah, melt them down. There musical it is. Instruments. We don't have enough saxophones. that's the news this week.
Yeah.
We'll be back next week. That's what we do.
Yeah.
Thanks to
yeah,
my mom for coming by.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And if you are somebody who wants to tell us what you found interesting about the Paradise Papers, we will probably cover that next
week.
Yeah,
we'll week. Probably get there
so
next week.
So get excited or tweet us. Do whatever you do.
Yeah.
We'll talk to you later.
Okay.
Bye.